Hi, Patrick here with another pod from Jamaica Inflected Britain. My name is Pop, don't mess with me. My rhythm and my rhyme gonna set you free. My love hip hop and my beats is new. And me wanna get famous like the Easy Crew. Catchy, isn't it? It's a kids' TV show that plays around with the English language, among other things. Before that, what the heck is going on in Belgium? The headlines say, language divides everything. But our correspondent says 2.5 hour lunches and surrealism are the true marks of Belgian culture. And before that, we'll talk with the Beijing-based American translator of Ai Weiwei, China's most famous and currently incarcerated artist. Now, translating him was never easy. Aside from the fear of arrest, there was his writing style, erratic in the extreme.
It's all over the place. Cynicism, irony, you know, literati language, and then he'll just start cursing, you know, just like let loose a stream of curses in the same paragraph. My name is Toots, me sorry, talks along, cause this jiggy little mouse, he been doing it wrong. He been playing tricks, so me lose me way,
to stop me singing with Gladstone Bray. This podcast, The World in Words, and The Mothership, The Big Show, The World Radio Program, they're both co-productions of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH radio station in Boston. Online, you can find us at theworld.org. You can find this podcast at theworld.org/language. You can also find it at patrickcox.wordpress.com. I post blog notes to go with each podcast at those sites. You can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is Patrick Cox, PatriCox. And there's a World in Words Facebook page. So today, the American-born translator of the blog posts and other writings of Chinese artist Ai Weiwei. Ai Weiwei is China's best-known contemporary artist. He was arrested just over a month ago. This translator is still in Beijing, so she's put herself at some personal risk. Then, A Tale of Two Languages, a conversation with the Big Show's Brussels-based tech correspondent Clark Boyd. He has all the latest on Belgium's linguistic wars, some of his own observations too, on life there for a foreigner who has no particular language axe to grind, but nonetheless runs into these language conflicts all the time. And then after that, Rasta Mouse, kids TV. Need I say more? So first, Ai Weiwei's translator. The US, along with many European governments, have been striking harsher and harsher tones when it comes to describing China's crackdown on freedoms. I say crackdown on freedoms. It's just a tightening up of a crackdown that was really almost permanently in place since Tiananmen Square. There's the increased cyber snooping. There's the retrofitting of the great internet firewall that blocks websites, anything that talks about the human rights situation in China. And there's the arrest of prominent activists, such as Ai Weiwei. It's funny calling him an activist. I mean, I think of him first and foremost as an artist. I certainly wouldn't call him a dissident. He's just someone who has criticized the government increasingly in recent years. And he has tested how tolerant the government is of his provocations. Well, he's found out now. A little over a month ago, he was arrested as he was attempting to board a plane from Beijing to Hong Kong. He hasn't been seen since. Now, no one thinks that the criticism from the US and European countries is going to lead to the release of Ai Weiwei. In fact, the Chinese government has voiced its irritation at these criticisms, saying that people around the world should trust China's judicial process. Still, there's a big question right now as to where the artist is and how he's doing. Nobody has heard from him, friends, family, colleagues, no one. And that includes the American art critic Lee Ambrosi. She lives in Beijing. She edited and translated the blogs that he wrote and posted between 2006 and 2009. On The Big Show, we Skyped Ambrosi, asking the questions. Is Marco Werman.
What is so inflammatory about Ai Weiwei's work as an artist? Is there one thing maybe in his blog that struck you as somewhat revelatory about who he is as an activist?
Absolutely. After 2008, which was the Olympic year in Beijing and was an important year for China in general, a lot of things transpired. And his blogging became very political then. He was a design consultant on the Olympic Stadium.
Right, the famous bird's nest.
I think that he felt attaching his name to something that was obviously so political in the sense that it inspired him to start speaking out against things that he didn't like or that he saw as very hypocritical. And that's when he started talking about the fake smile of China. And then after that, there was the earthquake, and he did a lot of online activism and organizing.
And presumably the Chinese government has been reading his blogs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything that goes online here is read by many, many filtered layers of people who determine the content as okay or not okay, which started happening actually at the end of the blog. One of the last posts was him talking about his discussion with his family, in which he shares with them his decision to continue regardless of what the consequences might be. Oh, here he said, what can they do to me? Nothing more than to banish, kidnap, or imprison me. Perhaps they could fabricate my disappearance into thin air. I'm reading that from the book.
One of his last blog posts in the book, Ai Weiwei's blog. Did Ai Weiwei write something in his blog recently that may have prompted his detention or disappearance?
No, the blog has been closed since the middle of 2009.
I see.
But he was a very active Twitter user. And I think he had something like 70,000 followers at the end and was just extremely political. He became sort of one of those cornerstone personalities because he was not afraid to talk about anything or to tweet anything. So if there was ever any sort of sensitive news or anything that what you wouldn't find in, let's say, Xinhua news reports, you could almost be positive that if you read his blog, you would find reference to it.
What is it like for you to translate his work? And what have you learned about him, do you think, by translating his blog?
I definitely learned a lot about the man himself, just going over the text so many times, because his writing is completely erratic. It's all over the place, different styles, various levels of cynicism, irony, sort of literati language, and then he'll just start cursing, he'll just let loose a stream of curses in the same paragraph. By the end of the book translation project, I was so absorbed in his ways of thinking and his mindset. I was just filled with anger every day. Everything seemed so exposed, corruption, all the problems of society.
Well, the fact that you translated this book, especially these days with this tough human rights crackdown, that could be viewed as provocative by the Chinese government. Do you have concerns for your own safety?
I do have a little bit of concern. For instance, doing interviews is probably not a great idea, but I think it's better to talk about things than to not talk about them. But I say that with an American passport, so I'm very lucky to have an ingrained sense of freedom of speech.
Well, thanks for speaking with us and telling us more about artist and activist Ai Weiwei.
Not a problem.
Lee Ambrosi is an American art critic. She's just edited and translated Ai Weiwei's blog, Writings, Interviews, and Digital Rants 2006 to 2009.
What would we do without translators, eh? It's a somewhat overlooked vocation, but it's vital. If you missed the interview, by the way, with Aya Watanabe in pod number 125, check it out. She's the one who volunteer translated a bunch of tweets by Japanese people caught up in the aftermath of the quake and the tsunami. Okay, now on to an interview I recorded with a translator of culture, I guess you could say, of linguistic culture. And there was a slight last-minute alteration in the guest, as you'll hear. Here goes. Okay, so this week I was hoping that we'd have a really, really special guest.
But instead.
but Kevin could not make it in. Long-time listeners will know that we had Kevin the Second in a few months ago. I was hoping to bring Kevin in, but I couldn't pry her, not him, but her, away from my daughter. So stepping in is the world's Belgium correspondent, Clark Boyd.
That's right.
Clark, you're also the tech correspondent,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah.
I mean, normally when we have these little chats, we talk about what we're going to say a little bit ahead of time before we walk into the studio and maybe read a couple of articles. In this case, we haven't.
I like the way it's only a modicum of preparation, even at the best of times. We read a couple of articles and...
Right. That means we know just that much more than everybody else.
What you're trying to tell people is this time we're doing this completely off the cuff.
totally blind. So, Clark, open your mouth and speak.
Well, the big question coming from a land as divided as the one that I live in right now, Belgium, I have to ask, which language would you like me to speak in?
Because
there's not one, not two, but three official languages in Belgium. There's Dutch, of course.
Wait a minute. There's three languages and no government, right?
There's no federal government. Mm-hmm. However, take your pick. All of the regional governments are still functioning, which is why, despite the fact that it is coming up on, in fact, we did pass a year since the last government officially fell or was basically said we need to dissolve the government.
Right. And that was also around, it was a record, right? They set a record for the longest time without government.
The record actually before that. They beat out Iraq for the record. For a country with that. And, you know, this is very interesting coming from the American perspective on this, because you think no federal government, you think Somalia. And Belgium couldn't be any more different than that, because you do have these regional governments which have an incredible amount of power to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then you have local governments which have an incredible amount of power.
Right.
So all of, I mean, most of daily life for Belgians continues without any interruption. There are very few things that are affected by this.
And those regional local governments operate in the language of the people who they serve, right?
Yes and no. It gets even more complicated, because there's a Flemish parliament. There's a Wallonian parliament. So the Flemish parliament would be in Flanders, which is the predominantly Dutch-speaking part. The Wallonian parliament would deal with Wallonia, which is mostly a French-speaking part. Then you have a Brussels parliament, which is the only official bilingual one. But, okay, so those, you have those parliaments. There are also language community parliaments that sit.
And what are they?
French language community parliament would deal with any French language speaker in the country.
What do they legislate on?
What they're there for is to advocate for the language communities of Belgium. So apart from sort of the geographical split, because you do have plenty of French speakers. Oh, I shouldn't say plenty. You have French speakers that live and or work in Flanders, in the Dutch-speaking part. And you have Dutch speakers that live and or work in the French-speaking part. And then you've got the tiny little enclave of German speakers, and they have their own little language community as well. One of the interesting things, and one of the in my reporting, one of the things that always comes up about why do we have these splits and these issues and why is Belgium completely unable to form a federal government, is that there are no pan-Belgian parties. So somebody from the French-speaking part, from Wallonia, they can't vote for a Flemish party. They have to vote for a Wallonian party. So there's like the Wallonian, there's the Flemish Greens and the Wallonian Greens.
You mean it's not on their electoral roll?
No, they can't.
Oh.
And people point to this as part of the reason why it's impossible at this point. I mean, the deal would be that you've officially created a de facto two-country situation.
No wonder people are saying this is no longer a country.
But I think more interesting for your listeners, I mean, language threads its way through this. And the language, of course, is intricately tied with the culture. You have that linguistic divide is also a huge cultural divide between Northern European, Dutch-speaking, Germanic, and Southern-speaking, Romantic, you know, French. And a lot of people will also say that fundamentally that is a clash that is an accident of history, a part of Holland that nobody wanted and a part of France that nobody wanted. So they created this country and they said, strength through unity, which is the motto of the country. But then they went, and when they actually got around to running the country, realized it wasn't going to work and have been tiptoeing around it ever since and creating these regional governments and regional parliaments and language parliaments and trying to sort things out that way. And what they've done is basically created a de facto two-country situation anyway.
So what does that mean for you now living there? As soon as you leave Brussels, do you find, do you have the sense that you're entering different countries?
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely. Because Brussels is its own thing.
Right.
And it's this little tiny slice that sticks up into Flanders. It's basically surrounded by Flanders for the most part. And Brussels is the only place where you have to have street signs in both languages. And you can take tram rides that will take you out. I mean, you don't have to get on a big train to get into Flanders. You can just do a short little tram ride. The minute you cross that line, you know it, because you don't see any more signs in French. The French signs are gone. It's all in Dutch.
Mm. Schools taught.
Yeah.
Only in...
No. Well, this is a big sticking point. Historically, French was the language of power. Full stop. So you speak to people who grew up in Flanders, and it's my grandparents were never allowed to speak Dutch. Now we're going to speak Dutch. At the same time, they'll tell you that we, the Flemish, the Dutch speakers, we're the ones who from the age of 10 learn how to speak French. So whenever we come across a French-speaking Wallonian, it's always us that's making the effort. They don't learn Dutch down in Wallonia. And that's, you know, that's a horrific overstatement, but right. It is really true. The Flemish are very sort of out in front as far as learning another language.
I suppose you could make the argument that French is a more important global language to learn than Dutch.
It is, but you know, this is all becomes political too, because in the midst of all of this Dutch versus French stuff, you had educators in Flanders saying, oh yeah, yeah? Well, now French is going to be the third language. English is going to be our second language, and we're just not going to learn as much French as we used to. The interesting part is you do get into situations where you get Flemish and Wallonians together, and instead of using one or the other as the common language, they'll switch into English.
Mm. Neutral.
Neutral, which is a little bit weird.
Yeah, it's strange.
But then my experience there is the whole thing is kind of strange.
Yeah. So I don't know for how long I've been reading about, you know, how Belgium can't go on like this. There's this linguistic divide, no government more recently. Can it go on like this? I mean, it seems as like it's going on perfectly fine right now.
I think there's a variety of levels to that. Yes, day to day, it's very hard to tell that anything is amiss. Most people's lives are going along. If you are waiting on the federal government to move, like on immigration paperwork or something like that, if you're an immigrant in the country, then you're feeling it pretty hard, because these are the decisions that are not getting made. There's a caretaker government in place, but they're only taking care. They're not planning anything. They're not, you know... To me, the weirdest part of the situation was crystallized in the fact that Belgium is obviously assisting NATO in operations in Libya. And the Belgians are pointing out, now, wait a minute. We're a country without a federal government ousting a country that has a government? How can we do that?
Yeah.
It's a weird situation, and it is a weird situation.
Presumably, the operational language of NATO is English, right?
I would imagine, yes. Yeah. I think the best explanation of it is, to me, and there would be Belgians who disagree with setting it up this way, but it makes sense to me, is the cost of divorce higher than the cost of staying together?
Mm.
Like I was saying, the linguistic divide is a symptom of a larger cultural divide. And the interesting thing is, I already talked about how they separate parliaments. They also separate media. Any television shows produced in Wallonia only run on Wallonian television. Any shows produced in Flanders only run on Flemish television. Neither of those sets are translated into the other, even translated into the other language, right, or dubbed or subtitled or anything. The only thing those two countries have in common is that they maybe both watch CSI.
Mm.
And the Flemish would want to watch that with subtitles because they like to practice their English. And the Wallonians, of course, would want it dubbed. So you've created a media landscape which basically leads to Wallonians don't know anything about Flemish authors, Flemish musicians, Flemish artistic community at all. The Flemish don't know anything about the Wallonian authors, artists, musicians, anything. There's no shared culture. The only thing that would be shared would be they both know, you know, the latest Madonna track. Or whatever, right, like that. It's to me, the more I interview people about that, the more I think that's a huge part of this puzzle. The fact that you've separated the media like that, that there is no shared culture for people to latch onto and say, this is Belgian, apart from beer, chocolate, fries. I mean, these are the tropes that you always fall back on, and when you write about it, or people, even when Belgians talk about it. You know,
fries. You actually mentioned fries the other day, and the word for fries
in Dutch, it's frietjes.
So they use the French, and then they add a Dutch ending.
Yeah. So they add the little J-E-S at the end of that. It's like a diminutive, which is how you kind of soften Dutch a little bit.
Would they say that? Would they use that in the Netherlands, or do they have their own word for it?
I mean, Preach is there as well.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, it's not just a sort of...
Although, the more I'm up in Flanders, the more I realize that it is very much a dialect of Dutch. It's very much its own dialect.
But they don't necessarily have a huge, an additional number of loanwords from French because at least...
You do find places in Brussels where there was a mixing of the two languages to a greater extent than right. what you see now. There was a part of Brussels called the Marolles, which is famous for this sort of patois, and you still see bits and pieces of it around town. In fact, there's a nice little chain of restaurants, which I quite like, called Skive Lavabo. Now, you'll notice lavabo is actually a Spanish word. So this was not just a patois of French and Dutch. This was a patois of numerous European languages. And Skive Lavabo means like crooked sink. And to put crooked in front of something... the skeeve part, to put crooked in front of something in Dutch, and I'm apologizing to Dutch listeners because one Dutch person described me trying to speak and or write Dutch as, it's like my dog suddenly being able to talk. Very typically direct Dutch, telling me, please don't try to type, please don't try to write Dutch words or try to speak the Dutch language. Okay. But I'm going to try it anyway because this is a good story. So skeeve is like crooked, and the worst thing you can call somebody in this part of the world is like a skeeve architect, crooked architect. That's like actually pretty powerful, nasty thing to call somebody because it all goes back to the fact that like architects came in and tore down all these old neighborhoods and built all these like fancy new buildings. And so it's still in people's memory that to call somebody like crooked. But in this part of town, you still see this kind of patois, but it's dying out. It's become this thing that people just write academic papers on. You know, not that it's bad to write academic papers, but as a living, breathing dialect, kind of interesting. Well, look here. Somehow they were able to sort of get these two languages together in some form to communicate with each other. You just don't see that anymore.
You've mentioned immigration. I wonder if that is the other thing, along with, you know, the rise of English, that might presumably when immigrants come, if the federal government ever signs the papers and gets to come. I mean, immigrants are coming from outside of Europe for the most part, right?
Oh,
and do they want to learn French? Do they want to learn Dutch? Do they come in and speak English, the neutral language?
Well, you get a lot of people coming from French-speaking backgrounds to begin with into the country. But I have seen situations where it all depends on what part of the country they end up moving to and living in and working in. If they end up living and working in Flanders, they're going to end up speaking some Dutch. And if they end up in Brussels, chances are pretty good they're going to be in French. And if they're in Wallonia, it's going to be French. But let's face it, the Flemish economy is much stronger than the Wallonian economy right now. So a lot of these people are moving out to Flanders to find work. And like the second generation that are there are moving out to live in these places, which is causing some interesting kind of backlash because you've never really had that in Flanders before. And people are figuring out how they're going to deal with that.
Well, they'll be finding out about this particular immigrant, Clark Boyd.
Probably you're going to get a serious feedback from your Dutch listeners about this. This stuff is taken incredibly seriously.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's taken very seriously by some folks.
Yeah.
There's also a Belgian sense of humor. I mean, if I actually had to point to one thing that I think everything that we've talked about here, you talk about shared. What's shared? Total sense of surrealism because they live in this surreal place.
Oh, right. Magritte, the painter. And that's still alive and across the linguistic divide?
Complete. And it's always, it's the same trope in the way that beer and chocolate and frites are. It's always the question, so, you know, what's it like living in a country with no government for, well, it's the land of Magritte, so it's surreal. So what did you expect from us?
Right, right.
So I've got at least 20 people on tape saying that. I could just do a little, montage of all the people who have told me that. Always you'll hit the moment where you're interviewing people and you say, ask a question about how does it work. Oh, Clark, it's complicated. It's always complicated. It's just like that is the word that I would use to describe the whole thing. Complicated. And I'm sure that. Plenty of the things that I've said here are probably not quite right, but that's because most Belgians couldn't explain it to you either.
Yeah. When you say it's complicated, that reminds me of the Balkans. And in a way, maybe what it is Yugoslavia without the guns.
That is exactly how I've heard people describe this. I don't think there's the level of ethnic hatred. Are Belgians going to take to the streets with guns and weapons? No, because everybody's too busy enjoying their 2.5-hour lunch. The quality of life is good. There's less economic pressure in a place like that. You know, by and large, there's no federal government, but people are pretty happy.
Sounds like you want to get back there.
Yeah, now that I think about it, when's my plane leave?
Well, Clark, that was great. Thanks.
You're welcome, Patrick.
And there's more fun with Clark in his technology podcast. You can get all the details at theworld.org/technology. Let's eat sideways now. And, well, just to be fair, I picked out one French expression and one Dutch one, both of which offer some kind of reflection on the state of affairs in Belgium. The French one is rêve à deux, meaning a dream shared by two people, or a mutual hallucination. Now, is that Belgium? Here's the Dutch word, and I'm less certain that I'm getting the meaning right here. I'm only working with one source on this. So, Dutch speakers, let me know. The word is Sarbo, S-A-R-B-O. Sounds like the name of a person, maybe. And the meaning is a person who regularly sleeps with the same partner while living separately. Now, that is Belgium. Woof. My thanks to Adam Jacot de Buono and his wonderful Tingo books. That's where both of these eating sideways expressions came from. Well, let's face it. We all, or nearly all of us, resist changes in our beloved mother tongues. There are those of us who are all for the changes in principle. We like the idea that a language like English can be so accommodating of the habits of its users. But we don't always like some of the new stuff we hear or read. I've done so many hits on this theme in previous pods that I'm not even going to cite them. But I am going to cite one podcast episode, number 97. That was when we took a look at foreign language learning and kids TV. And it may not seem too controversial to throw in a few words of Spanish or Chinese into a kids show, but it is. And what's also controversial is presenting a show with a marked dialect and accent. That's the connection with messing with the mother tongue. And that's the case in Britain right now with a kids show that's wildly popular, but also has its critics. Our report comes from the Big Show's Alex Galifant.
Rastamos, come in. Are you reading me?
Before Rastamouse was a TV show, it was simply a book that TV producer Greg Boardman read to his son.
I kind of picked this book up and said, oh, we'll read this one tonight, and we read it. And he was totally smitten with the nature of the storytelling in the book and the rhyme and the characters.
Rastamouse is a mouse. He wears a Rastafarian-style woolly hat and plays guitar in a reggae band called The Easy Crew.
But when things go wrong in Mouseland, President Wensleydale calls up the Easy Crew and asks Rastamouse and the Easy Crew for help.
Come immediately!
Rastamouse hangs up his guitar. They get on their skates and their skateboards and they skate over to the president and to find out what's going on.
Look like we need it by the press. Let's go!
Yes, that's President Wensleydale, which is also the name of the cheese made famous by Wallace and Gromit. Like those characters, Rastamouse is brought to life in stop-motion animation.
Me glad you come. It's enough to make me weep. Me precious portrait, look, it gone, while me upstairs asleep.
The TV show, just like the book, is all about redemption. Rastamouse helps the bad guy make amends.
You make things right. And everything cool.
Rastamouse and Scratchy and Zuma, also known as the Easy Crew.
In the few weeks since Rastamouse started airing on British TV, it's become a huge hit, but not with everyone. The BBC, which broadcasts the show on its preschool network, says it's received a handful of complaints arguing that Rastamouse promotes black stereotypes. About 100 others have taken issue with the language used in the show, specifically the Afro-Caribbean dialect. Boardman says that one of the book's authors, Michael Webster, is himself Afro-Caribbean.
If Michael didn't have the culture and the heritage that he brings to the show, then certainly Rastamouse wouldn't exist.
It's a show with multicultural appeal. But multicultural is a divisive word in Britain these days. Prime Minister David Cameron recently declared the multicultural society to have been a failure, arguing that the British state had for too long tolerated communities living in segregation from each other, instead of fostering shared values and a common culture. Cameron wasn't taking aim at Rastamouse. But still, producer Greg Boardman says his show does the opposite. It portrays no one specific community or geography, but instead reflects the author's experience of the world.
And their experience of the world is partly Caribbean and partly urban West London.
The British actor who provides the voice of Rastamouse, Reggie Yates, is not of Caribbean descent. His parents come from Ghana. He recently offered a defense of multicultural programming in a video taped for an award ceremony.
It's incredibly important for not just minorities, but for everyone to have groundbreaking shows and to have shows that reflect a multicultural Britain, because that way, I think we all have the opportunity to understand each other just that little bit better.
Caribbean culture is deeply embedded in the UK. Waves of immigrants arrived in Britain from Jamaica and elsewhere in the wake of the Second World War. That didn't happen to the same extent in the United States. So if and when Rastamouse makes it to the US, it's unlikely that the characters will sound the same. Boardman says what's important is not the specific accent or dialect, it's the stories and the attitude of Rastamouse that count. And those things aren't ever going to change. For The World, I'm Alex Galifant.
Listen up, friends, for the wicked sounds of Rastamouse and the Easy Crew. Hooking up with Gladstone, Toots and Ice Pop to bring you something fresh and new. With a rocking plan to make a parting good. We'll be coming from Grove Town to drop this heavy, heavy tune.
Rastamouse is getting ready to take over the world, it seems. He's going from strength to strength, and not just on British TV. He and his band of merry mice, they're going to be playing the Glastonbury Music Festival this summer. Not sure how that's going to work. I'll be back in a few days with more Lingualicious stories. See you then.